kind of, we're between Tenasket and Wakanda. My name's Carl. Julie asked me to tell you just a little bit more about my background, just because I have some roots up here. I grew up, or part of my growing up was in Oroville, where we lived for, I think, 6 years when I was a little kid, and then lived in Cooley City the other years, so down south, so kind of central Washington and that. I didn't spend a lot of time over here. I spent more time kind of toward Molson, Chisaw, Sipsmart, and places like that. So,
but Ennis is the next turn.
That's right. We used to hang out up Ennis Valley. We called it Ennis Valley, I guess, when I was a little kid. But anyway, welcome. The thing that I wanted to try to relate to you here is the story of the Cordilleran Ice Sheet. Cordilleran Ice Sheet. And particularly the work of the Okanagan lobe of the Cordilleran Ice Sheet. I'm a little rusty, so hang in there.
A bike, you'll get it.
And I bet that's right. It all comes back. So the story here is the Cordilleran Ice Sheet. And the Cordilleran Ice Sheet, Cordillera, if you know a little bit of Spanish, means mountains. And so this is an ice sheet that originated in the mountains, in the coast ranges, really, of BC, Alaska, and then kind of the northern parts of the Cascades, and moved south in what we call the Pleistocene. So when Steve was when Steve was talking about 50 million years of geology at our first stop, now we're in the last couple million years. So this ice sheet formed. And it grew, it waned, it grew, it waned multiple times, beginning roughly 2 million years ago. It moved south, and it had, I think there were five lobes of the Cordilleran Ice Sheet. If you go east over into Montana, there was the Flathead Lobe. There was the Purcell Trench Lobe, and that's a really important lobe because it blocked off the Clark Fork River and impounded Glacial Lake Missoula. Glacial Lake Missoula doesn't have a story for us today here, but it does when you head south. When you get down to Bridgeport in that area, you're in an area that was impacted by Glacial Lake Missoula flooding. So the Flathead Lobe, the Purcell Trench Lobe, the Columbia Lobe, the Okanagan Lobe, and then we got to go over the Cascades to the Puget Lobe. So five lobes of ice. Our thing is the Okanagan Lobe, and the evidence that the Okanagan Lobe left is all around us here, and it's going to be around us at multiple stops today. And when I'll try to just kind of point some things out, the first thing I look for with glacial evidence is what I don't know that you'll find this word in the dictionary, but it's hummocky terrain, meaning ups and downs with no real logic to it. It's kind of like you dump a wheelbarrow full of soil and you see lots of ups and downs in that pile of debris. Well, if you look around here, we may or may not see much hummocky terrain here. We definitely see a rolling terrain. A rounded terrain. And so as we travel today, I'll see if I can do a better job pointing out kind of hummocks, but certainly as you look on the skyline, you see rounded bedrock. Some of that, maybe it's rounded metamorphic core complex, maybe it's boulder stuff. That rounding came about from glacial erosion. So as the glacier advanced, as the Okanagan Lobe advanced, it scoured surfaces and it plucked surfaces. So the scouring would be just like, think of that, this debris entrained in the base of the ice, and it's like sandpaper, but very slow sandpaper. Very powerful though, because there was probably on the order of 5,000 feet of ice here. That's hard to fathom. And that's a number that I have not verified in multiple sources, but I saw it the other day when I was researching for this, They talked about 4,500 to 5,000 feet of ice in the Chisaw area. So we'll say that's ballpark here.
Depth?
Thickness.
Yeah. Thick.
Because this is right around 3,000 feet here.
3,000 feet elevation. And Harris and I were talking on the drive up. Tenasket's at about, 900 feet?
Yeah.
And how high is Chisaw again?
28.
So we'll say 3,000. How high is Buckhorn Mountain? Is Buckhorn
4.5?
Well,
Bonaparte's 7.
So Bonaparte's 7. I know there's glacial evidence on the top of Bonaparte. But it may. I'm not sure how that fits in the story. But there was roughly 5,000 feet of ice thickness here. And when you have that great thickness of ice, it's the ice thickness. Okay, ice thickness. Sitting on this landscape, that ice is essentially going to be very effective as an eroder. It's abrading, scouring these surfaces. And the evidence for that, and you can see this best from Google Earth, when you go home and you log on to your computer, look at an image from above, and you're going to see a landscape that is scoured. And what should be the orientation of the scours?
South.
To the south, generally. But it'll vary. Some of it might be in the Chisaw area. This report was talking about to the southeast. I saw, as we moved to the west, I saw more of a south or a southwest orientation. And it varies because ice flows radially. It spreads out and it flows. And we see that. Those different orientations on the Waterville Plateau, a place where I take students every year. This would be centered around Mansfield in that area. Huge town, right? Mansfield. And so you see ice scouring clear down there, but up here in the highlands, it's just prominent. So scouring by ice, and that's what gives us some of this rounded appearance of the terrain.
So this is why it's kind of narrowish here and then opens out?
Well, let's wait on the valley story for a minute. We're in a big valley that's running generally east-west, and I'm saying the ice scouring, a lot of that is happening north to south generally. The ice is also, in addition to scouring, it's plucking. It literally pulls out big blocks of bedrock because it freezes to them. Okay, so as ice flows along where there's a lot of pressure with that ice, it will scour a surface. Where the pressure is released, it will pluck boulders. The temperature is lower, so it plucks boulders, and in doing so, it leaves an abrupt front. And my interpretation here, this is kind of back of the envelope, as I look at that bedrock on our skyline, it's smooth on the north side, and it's steeper on the south. That might reflect scouring on the north, plucking on the south. Okay? So that's glacial erosion. Glaciers also deposit, and they'll deposit in sometimes as they advance, and they'll leave these linear deposits that we call drumlins. I'm not sure if we're going to see any today. If we do, I'll help you out with that. Hummocky terrain that I talked about earlier is just where glaciers just dump their deposits, as they sit in place. And so when you see this up and down terrain that has no real drainage in it, and you're in an area that other things suggest glaciation, I would think that is also good evidence. It's the glacial till. Okay, so now that brings us to the story of what's the origin of this valley. And we're going to be in valleys all day. We've got a couple stops in, is it Beaver Creek?
Yeah.
We've got, near Beth Lake and Beaver Lake, we've got a possible stop at the end of the day at, is it Antoine? Antoine Creek? You got these valleys, and for you locals, you know there's all kinds of valleys around that don't always have streams in them. For example, when you drive from Tenasket to Omak, you know that you're not following the Okanagan River the whole way. You're following a real dry drainage, a dry valley from south of, what is it, Krumbacher Lake to Riverside. You're in a big valley, but there's no stream. And if you go across the river at Tenasket, there's other drainages. I think one that comes down from Spectacle Lake that they just seem odd. They're big valleys, but no water. Well, here, we're in a pretty good-sized valley, and we've got a little creek, right? This is Bonaparte Creek here?
Yeah.
Not much of a creek. It's hard to envision this forming this valley. So what the term that we use is underfit streams. The stream is underfit to the valley. It just doesn't, make sense. The interpretation of that in glacial terrain is, hey, there was a lot of meltwater here. As the glacial ice melted, we had a lot of meltwater coming down these drainages, and that scoured this drainage. It may be combined with the bedrock geology. Maybe there's faulting in here as well. We talked about faulting in the Okanagan Valley that helped create that big, broad valley.
I think you're right, because even our stream, Patterson Creek, will be above, and it'll go down, and it'll pick up someplace else on top.
Sure. So there, is the valley, does the valley have its origin in the current conditions? And mostly in this terrain up here, I would say no. It goes back to its glacial heritage. Okay, so We've got a valley that is likely glacial erosion created. Now, the other story to fit in is you can see some terrace-like features. See that bench up above? And these are common. If you drove up from, some of you said you're from Omak in that area, and you drove up the Okanagan this morning, you see terraces all over, and you see massive terraces that you could land 747s on. They're huge. You can grow an orchard on them. You got terrace on the up valley as well. These are awesome. So how do these come about in this landscape? In your guidebook, it says that these are kame terraces, K-A-M-E. A kame is glacial outwash, glacial meltwater, that is, a kame is made out of glacial outwash. Kames come in all shapes and sizes. They can be just a kame, where it's a deposit that was formed in or under glacial ice. When water flowed in carrying sediment, it filled a void in the ice, and later when the ice melted away, you're left with a hill. That's a kame. There's things called kame deltas that are deltas, like a river delta within the ice. There's kame terraces, which is the interpretation on a lot of these benches that formed adjacent to the ice.